Lecture 4, Christmas Seminar, Next Step, Illumination. I am spiritually illumined. Lecture 4, Diversity in Illumination. How about that? Diversity in Illumination. We have so many ways of looking at illumination, so many ways of looking at what is important to us in life, so many ways of viewing our time and our effort and our energies and how we're going to express ourselves, how we're going to live our lives, and what our values are. And one of the worst values that we have, worst value? How about that? One of the worst values that we have is the value of possession. We are possessed by our attitude about ourselves. We are possessed about how we go about doing things, and we think that is the only way to go about doing things, and we want to stay with it, we want to retain that, we want to own that, but that's our signature, that's who we are, and we want to have that. And sometimes we even have feeling sorry for ourselves in that signature. We feel that we have a right to have an all-over tan. We have a right to have a sick body. We have a right to have the genes and chromosomes that our parents gave us and have that limit our body and limit our experience. We have a right to have that. And then we get the right. We get the right. There can be a dozen kids in one family, and maybe four or five of them have the genes of their parents, and the others don't have the genes of their parents. What? How could children not have the genes of their parents when they have their parents, and it's truly their parents? Well, four or five of them felt that whatever the history of their family was, whatever the story of their family development was, that was what they were under the responsibility of. They were possessed by that, you know. And the rest of them, they just went out and lived their own life and did their own thing, and they didn't know that they were limited. They didn't know that they were going to die at the age of 35 because everybody in the family died at the age of 35. They didn't do it. They didn't die. Like, it's crazy. How did they not die? It seems strange. Everybody else in the family died, and they should have died too, but they didn't. A lot of times it's because they don't know. But a lot of children just seem to be intuitive of what their genes and chromosomes are. They look at their dad and they look at their mom and they say, my goodness, you're getting bald at the age of 30. I guess we'll all get bald at the age of 30. And look at mom, she's wearing a wig already and she's only 40, you know. My goodness, she has no hair. She hasn't had chemotherapy or anything, but she has no hair. Now, my gosh, that must run in the family. And then there's some of the kids, they have full heads of hair. Well, they take after Uncle Joe, and they take after the grandma and grandpa, and they take after previous generations. Well, no. We establish whatever it is about ourselves by our thought, by our choice, by our determination. It's what we believe. I told you the story of the one man who went in for his physical examination at the age of 35, and the doctor said, perfect, went home and died. He went home and he read a letter that his father said, don't open until you're 35. And he opened the letter and his father said, it's in the genes of our family that everyone dies at the age of 35. What a wonderful father. Yeah. Thanks for telling me. And the kid promptly died. Had no reason to die, just that he was told that that's when the family died. Well, we do that. We have a problem here in our life of listening to the world around us. And we think we're very wonderful in listening to the world around us. We think we're very intelligent, that we're using good judgment listening to the world around us. And the more we listen to the world around us, the more we're limited by what the world around us has to say. And the world around us tells us that we can only do certain things, that certain foods are not good for us, certain foods are very good for us, certain attitudes are good for us, certain attitudes are not good for us. How many of you know some real old men and women who are constantly bickering at each other, screaming at each other, hollering at each other? And you say, they shouldn't live a long life like that. They should have killed each other off a long time ago. But they don't. Because that's their way of showing love. Boy, that's a crummy way of showing love. I certainly wouldn't recommend that. Well, no, we wouldn't. But they do. And they don't think that it is not a way of showing love. You see, the doctors tell us that that would give us high blood pressure and that would space us right out of the chart. But this couple, and there are many like that, this couple believes that that's just fine. They say, oh, the making up is fun, you know. It's so wonderful. Well, that's not our privilege. That's not our privilege. We've been brainwashed into thinking that thoughts are things, and every thought that we think is going to bear fruit. And it is. There's no escape. Every thought you think is going to bear fruit. And you're going to die by it. You're going to be destroyed by it. But then along comes a diversity in our thinking and says, hey, I'm going to put a new cause in motion. I'm going to put a new thought in motion. And my new thought is that I am a balanced, healthy, harmonious, happy person. And the rest of the world, you're not balanced, healthy, harmonious, and a happy person. You're not. I know you. I've seen you, you know. And you say, well, so be it. What happens to those friends? They go away. You don't chase them away. They just go away. Because you are irascible. You are not living up to what they think you should live up to. And so, you start living up to this new code. They, meanwhile, do whatever they do, and you do not care. But if you're possessed by them, that's my best girlfriend, my best boyfriend, that's my best friend that I've ever had, you know, we're buddies, then you got a problem. You got a problem. You can release them, or you can be possessed by them. It's up to you. Now, one of the things that we miss so often on our journey into our spiritual illumination is that we think we're so damn good that we don't need to practice the program. And because we have that attitude, we don't make progress. Now, I don't care whether you make progress or not. I said that at the breakfast table. I said, I don't care if you ever become spiritually illumined or not. In fact, I laugh when I see that you think you're not making any spiritual progress, because I see right through you. I see the divinity in you already there. I see your magnificence already there, but you don't want to look at it because you think you have to go about it a different way. And you do. How many of you, if I say, let us pray, immediately bow your head and fold your hands, you know, or put your hands in a prayerful way to heaven? And where is heaven?
Right inside.
No. Where is heaven and where is hell? People think it's up there and out there, and instantly, you know, oh, go to hell. Well, now, does that mean go outside to some place, you know, or something bad? Or, man, I'm in heaven. That means you're in a state of consciousness, of bliss and happiness, and that the eternal heavens have opened up for you and poured out blessings. Don't you ever say that? That the heavens pour out blessings to me? You see, we've always got these external attitudes. We have these external feelings now, and we're going to continue having them for the rest of our life. There is no salvation. There is no way to get away from it unless you change your attitude from thinking that you're all done and there's nothing more you have to do. You see, this is one little game Rhonda plays very well, but the rest of you are doing, you're coming right in a close second with her. And this is intellectualizing. You intellectualize on these things and become tells you you can intellectualize on it, you think you're just great. You think you're just wonderful. But, you know, you're not. You can intellectualize about everything under the sun, but until you have made it yours, it's nothing. You can intellectualize on how it is to meditate, how it is to be illumined, how it is to be a joy to the world, you know. But until you experience it in your heart. And Ellen, what did Gertrude pose for? She was on the cover of some magazine. What was it, Playgirl or Playboy or something? Or what was she on the cover of the magazine? Bliss. Maybe not the cover, but an inside page. But she represented bliss. Oh yes, now you remember. What was she doing?
Meditating in
She was meditating in the middle of the road, in the middle of traffic. Now, here she was meditating in the middle of traffic. Now, do you think she was posing for that picture that I'm going to meditate in the middle of traffic, I'm going to sit up straight and I'm going to keep my thoughts all perfect while I'm doing it? Or do you think she just was meditating?
She just was meditating.
She just was meditating, wasn't she? That's what made the picture so beautiful. You can always tell a posed picture. And you can tell a picture where a person is just relaxed and moving on into that inner space. And that's what she was doing. Well, this is what we do not do enough of. We do not do enough of taking the time for meditation. Taking the time for listening within and listening to that divine center within us and becoming at peace with it. What was Gertrude posing for? Why did we have a picture of Gertrude in what magazine?
Oh, because he wanted to put it in the Bliss booklet.
She was posing for the Bliss magazine. For the little Bliss publication. What's the full title?
The Inexhaustible Laughter of Heaven.
The Bliss. Inexhaustible Laughter of Heaven, Bliss. The Inexhaustible Laughter of Heaven, Bliss. Well, now, she posed for that. But did she pose? Or did we find the picture of her sitting there and then we take it? Or did we put her there? Well, regardless of how we got the picture, we got the picture. And what did it represent? It represented meditation. And what kind of meditation did it represent? Well, it showed how she has a great library in her home and that she reads this library every day. And she studies these great books by the masters and figures out how they found bliss, and she figures she'd try each one of them. And she would read Ernest Holmes, and she would read Charlie Fillmore, she would read the New Thought publications, and she would read the great Catholics and the great Protestant preachers and teachers and healers. And she would know all these things. She'd go to the gurus of India and China and Japan and South America and Africa, and she'd go throughout the entire world and just learn from all of these great leaders. And what is it that each great leader told her? One thing, go within. He said, we can only show you to go within, and we can only prepare you to go within. And you see, that is the key point, to prepare you to go within. And what is the preparation that prepares you to go within? It's learning how to be still, how to listen. They had a Santa on 34th Street, what was the name of it?
Miracle
on 34th Street, all right. In the name of that, in that movie, the storekeeper was attempting to get his wife to say yes to let Santa stay at their home for a while. And so he gave his wife a number of martinis and got her real happy, and she said, oh, sure, Santa can stay here. And so the storekeeper gave his wife the telephone, and she was lying on the lounge there eating bonbons and drinking her And so, as he did this, he kept handing her the phone. And she kept speaking into the earpiece of the phone and listening to the mouthpiece. Well, now she didn't hear anything. And the people on the other end of the line didn't hear her either. And so her husband kept switching it around. And so she switched it to the other hand and did the same thing, upside down. Finally, she got it right. Well, now, this is how we are when we're going into meditation. We listen at the mouthpiece, because our mouth is always in gear. We listen in the wrong way. We don't hear what's going on from the divine within us, because we're sort of upside down. And finally, when we get it straightened out, then we can begin to listen. And then the big thing is, can we begin to be quiet? Are we going to do all the talking? Oh God, how wonderful to talk. I've always wanted to say it for you, God. God, you must be very special. God, I think this is wonderful. Oh God, I just can't think of anything to say, but you're so wonderful. Well, God says, well, why don't you listen? Why don't you listen? And so, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, I was doing all the trouble. I mean, I won't do all the trouble. And you went on and on and on. But you see, we are so used to being in command of the conversation, so used to not having a moment of silence, because silence indicates that we're not on our toes, we're not sharing, you know. And when you can get that moment of silence, when you can let go and let God, when you can let that divine connection be made so that you can hear what's being said, some beautiful things come through there. Some very beautiful things come through. But learning in meditation to be still. You see, most of meditation is talking with God. You know, it's a sharing of ideas. Introspection is listening. And really, if we were to say that we would learn to introspect, that would be the highest thing that we could do. Now, how do you learn to introspect? How do you learn to let go of this intellectual know-it-allism that we do, you know? And how do we learn to just be at peace? Well, our big thing is to find out how we can listen to the divine within. And I guess the first thing on that is to believe that the divine is within. God, speak to me. Give me a sign, O God. O God, reveal thy will to me. Show me, O God, outside. You see, that's what we're doing. And whether you like it or not, that's what you're doing too. Because that is what we've been taught all of our life, is to go to that outward Father who will speak to us within. Go to that outward, and the inward will come. Well, now, that's not an easy thing to let go, because we're very attracted to that. Do you know how long it took you to let go of the fact that your father could beat anybody up? Your father can do anything? Your father knows it all? It took a long time. Ellen's still saying her father knew everything, and he was so fantastic. I haven't talked with many of you about your parents, but I'm sure that many of you, Sylvia too, she thinks her dad was just really a great, fantastic guy. He could do no wrong. He was just fantastic and glorious, right? Yeah. This is what we all think of our fathers, you know. Even when we had disagreements with them, and even when they goofed occasionally. But we still believe that, and it's true. Now, then how do we look at our Heavenly Father, if you will? How do we look at the divine within us? How do we look at the eternal principle? Now, can the principle make a mistake? Now, we have figured that one out. That is an intellectualism that we've done very well with. We have said the principle doesn't make a mistake, it's just we are using the principle in a negative way. Now, how can you use principle in a negative way? Well, now the principle says that if you feel heat, you back away. You will not touch the hot stove, okay? What's the principle going to say if you don't realize the stove is hot and you just lean over the stove, put your hands down, and, ah, you know, and you burn. Now, what's the principle going to say? Anybody? I'm burned! I'm burned! I'm burned! But what does a divine master say?
I'm perfect.
All is in divine order. I'm whole and perfect. All is in divine order. I'm whole and perfect. All is in divine order. I'm whole. So forth. Instantly. Not waiting 1 second. But instantly. So forth. Saying, I'm whole and perfect. All is in divine order. I'm whole and perfect. And you see, then you have put another principle in motion. The principle of being burned was put into motion, okay? And you got burned. But you didn't have to stay burned. You could say, I'm whole and perfect, instantly. Not waiting for 1 second. And then, what will happen? The burn will be gone. And it is gone. Why is it we have burns? Because we don't speak our word. We don't speak our word. We like that diversity in our thinking. We like that. We think that's a great idea. We think that's a great idea to have limitation in our world. You know, I've been on a lot of life experiences. One time we were on a boat. And the boat was out in the lake. We were just having a nice time. And all of a sudden, the boat sprung a leak. You know? And the water started coming in. And everybody screamed, oh, we're going to sink. And I said, no, we are not. And I didn't know why I said it. I just said, that's a nice thing to say. No, we're not going to sink. Well, the boat stopped sinking. We were in shallow enough water that it set on the bottom. And it didn't sink. Do you understand? It didn't sink. Now, well, of course it didn't sink. We're on the shallow water here. That's why it didn't sink. You know, they thought we were in deeper water. But they said, we didn't sink because we're on the shallow water here. That's not the point. The point is, I said, we're not going to sink. And I had the stupidity not to realize that we were sinking, you know. I believed that we wouldn't sink. I said, it's okay, we're not going to sink. I'm always doing silly things like that, even from when I was a little kid. And I just felt it, and I said, we're not going to sink. Now, what if we had been, oh, we're going to sink, and all of a sudden it fell on the bottom, you know, and the bottom was not very deep. And people say, oh, good, we didn't sink, we're on the bottom, you know. Would anyone take credit for having said, we're not going to sink? No. But was it in somebody's heart that we weren't going to sink? Did somebody think that? And did you think that they were stupid enough to say that they weren't going to sink when they weren't sure that they weren't going to sink, you know? And they were afraid that if they said we're not going to sink and then they sunk, then they'd be out of favor. But believe in yourself. The idea comes to you. I'm presenting that to you just to show you that in a stupid, unrealistic way, we didn't sink. And I had said, they thought I was wonderful, you know. They said, oh, that kid, you know, he sure knew what he was talking about. But they never said anything again. They didn't tell anybody else that. They didn't go home and tell my mom and dad about it, and so forth. They just, you know, they thought that's a cute miracle, and it was just, I had lucked out, you know. I had lucked out. And this is what we do when we have miracles happening in our life. We just say we lucked out. Instead of taking credit for them and saying, I did this. Now, I could go through many different illustrations, and you could too. And this is why I have you work in your blessing book, so that you will write these things down and so that you'll remember them. You'll remember them. I remember a lot of mine merely because I had been a reporter and an editor of newspapers. And in these newspapers, I would write down these stories. And so as I wrote down the stories, I couldn't say, I said I surround you with my pure white light of love and nothing happened. They would say, that's not objective journalism. But that's what happened. That's what happened. I surrounded them with my pure white light of love. And other people may have also. And that's glorious. But you see, we should meditate, we should practice, we should listen within. Now, We're here in this daily schedule for the Christmas 2003 seminar on the campus of God Unlimited University of Healing. And at 5 a.m., Ellen and I get up and exercise and enjoy the gym. At 7, we have breakfast. At 9, we have the first lecture. 10:30, we have the second lecture. At 1, we have lunch. At 3, we have the third lecture. At 4, we have meditation and spiritually illumined. 5, the gymnasium facilities for the rest of you. 7, dinner. 8, coffee and discussion. Okay? How many of you, between 3 and 5, take 1 hour for meditation? Actually, it's from 4 to 5. How many of you from 4 to 5 take that hour for meditation? How many of you instantly sit quietly or go someplace or do whatever you want to do, but take that time for meditation? Do you first go to the bathroom? Do you first get a drink of water or coffee? Do you first do something else? And here, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, they drift away on you. And pretty soon, it's like 20 minutes after, and you say, oh, I better get in the meditation. So, where shall I go? Then you have to make up your mind where you're going to go. You haven't set it up at the beginning of the day. So, well, I'll just go out here on the deck here, and I'll sit in the sun and enjoy the sun while I'm meditating. Okay, then at 5 o'clock, you're supposed to be at the gym. So that means that if you're a ways away, you got to come back. And if you're right outside the gym, that's not too bad. You're not going to waste any time. But if you're over at the uni or at the Citadel or anyplace else, it takes a few minutes to get over here. So there's another 10-minute shot. And you lost 20 minutes at the beginning and 10 minutes at the end. That's 30 minutes. Plus, how much time were you really sitting quietly listening to the Divine Within? 30 minutes? If so, that's great. But where are you? I provided time in our program for doing that. And it's very important to do it, because if you don't do it, you don't get the benefit. Now, are you on time at the gymnasium because you know that you can be on the piece of equipment at exactly 5 and 5:15 and 5:30 and so forth? Yes, you're there. You're there on time. If you're not, you feel a little guilty for not taking advantage of the program that's offered to you. Then, time to clean up the gym. How many of you waddle around enjoying yourself and playing around and just, since there's nobody using the stuff after 6 o'clock, you just enjoy it and use it, and that's okay. But then are you at time, at supper time? Now, what could you be doing between 6 and 7, 6:30 and 7? What could you be doing? What sort of thoughts are you thinking? Are you thinking I'm whole and perfect? Are you thinking I'm fantastic? Are you thinking I am spiritually illumined? Or are you thinking, I sure like to get a letter off to my mother. I sure like to do this. I sure like to do that. You know, you have thoughts go through your mind of things you'd like to do. They're diversions. The diversity, they want to take you away from your one-pointedness. And if you fall in the trap, then you're not going to get very far. So then you come in for dinner. And dinner's at 7. And you sit down, enjoy a pleasant dinner, have a nice discussion, get up afterwards, clear the table away, and go into the living room, sit in front of a nice roaring fire that Ingeborg has got going for us, and then we sit around and argue. Now, what should happen during the 8 o'clock coffee pause and the time we stop? What should happen during that coffee time, that discussion around the fireplace? What should happen?
A review from the seminar. A review on the seminar.
A review of the seminar's day, that'd be lovely. But what should it always be?
Principle talking.
It should always be uplifting. It should always be on the principle. It should always be something fantastic. It should not be where we're trying to show off our genius, or we're trying to show off our ideas, but more on the principle, on the principle, on the principle. And how do we talk on the principle? If we don't know what the principle is, how do we talk on the principle? We talk on the principle by saying everything is in divine order. Now, is everything in divine order? Is everything that we're working on in divine order? Is everything that we're doing in divine order? If it is in divine order, that's beautiful. But why then, if it is in divine order, do we end up having some heavy-duty discussions? Why do we end up having statements being made that are not harmonious? Why do we end up with asking, how can I improve? How can I be better? How can I be more fulfilled? How can we be more fulfilled? Does anyone have the answer?
Listening within.
By knowing that we are fulfilled.
Knowing that we are God.
Yeah. Gertrude, how can we be more fulfilled?
Peace. I am peace.
You listened to those tapes, didn't you? I am peace, that's right. Very good. Very good. I am peace. Now, what did she say when she said, I am peace? She brought balance to her consciousness. She brought balance to her thinking. And everything that she thought about was in harmony, peace, joy, right action. You see, that statement, we haven't used it much this seminar, but it's a very powerful one. We use it a lot in the consciousness, Master Consciousness Training seminar in Monterey, and it's very good. Well, Ingeborg?
Yes?
What do we think about
in that message? I'm whole and perfect.
Okay, good. Yeah. What do we think about?
Listen within. Listen within.
We think about listening within. That's what we're thinking about. We're thinking about listening within. That is what the whole program is all about. Now, Ellen, I want you to do what your divine program is for you to do. Now go and do it right now and never again talk to me. No. What would you do? What would you do to carry out what the divine in you wants for you to experience?
I need to listen what the divine
has. Aha. You need to listen first. You just don't get up and jump and run, because you don't know where you're running to or from. But you listen within. Now, what sort of thing is she going to hear when she listens within? What sort of thing? Is she going to hear, go wash the dishes? Is she going to hear, there's a spot on the carpet? Is she going to hear, Herb's hair is crooked? Is she going to hear all sorts of things? No, she's not going to hear any of that. She's only going to hear that she is perfect, that she is wonderful, that she is beautiful. And this she that she is going to be looking out at the world that she is, and she's going to see the world just like she is. Now, is there going to be anything that can be improved in the world?
No.
Why not?
It's already perfect.
What?
It's already perfect.
There's nothing to improve. It's already perfect. Now, why then does she want to improve things?
She doesn't.
Well,
she
what?
She listens within to know that she's doing the right thing.
What about all of these decisions you're making, and all these phone calls you're making, and all of these activities you're doing? Is that listening within?
Yeah.
It is, huh?
Yeah.
And what are you hearing when you listen within that way?
And I do the right phone calls and say the right words in the right moment.
And what are the right words for you to say in the right moment, for instance?
Always speaking principles. Always saying that basically everything is in the divine order.
And that you're a cold fish, huh? Can you be a warm fish? Can you be a loving, sensitive, caring person and still stay with principle?
Yes.
How do you be a loving, sensitive, caring person and still stay with principle?
Asking questions.
That's a good start. Yes?
By knowing who you are, who I am, as love, and knowing that my world is a reflection of my spirit.
That's enough. Say the first point. How does she know that she is doing the right thing? Can she do it by staying with principle? And the answer is yes, of course. Now, and you're giving indications of how that can be done rather than that it can be done staying with principle. You know what I mean? Now, is love principle?
Yes.
No. Love is not principle. And love is a response of the principle, but it is not principle. The principle is yes or no. The principle is, shall I do this or shall I not? Love is a relative form, and it's always going to be a relative form. We have thought gentleness, caring, and all these other things. They're just relative forms. And because they're relative forms, they're not where we put our attention. I see all in divine order, you know? And when I see all in divine order, there's no love there. You see, it may be in divine order that you don't get what you would like to have. Now, I know you're going to fight for your cause, but don't, because it's a losing battle. We're dealing here with principle, as Ellen was pointing out. She is working toward principle, not toward the relative. And the relative is when you have love, gentleness, kindness, where you have understanding, compassion, and all those things. Go ahead. You got your fingers waving there.
Love is, from the tape that I heard that you gave
now,
about love.
Just a minute. We have a problem here, Ellen. And the problem is that is a relative course in the relative organization. Yes, the course of doctoral work is the highest level of the relative, but it is still relative. And love is a very powerful and a very dynamic and a very important part of the relative world. But the moment you move in to illumination, there is no more relative attitude. You are moving right out of the relative. Not that you are not loving, not that you are not caring and so forth, but you are not caring with the definition that would come from love.
Like discipline we used this morning.
Yeah.
It's part of the past.
Well, like Ingeborg was saying, discipline is a relative virtue, and it has nothing to do with absolute. When you enter into absolute, or you enter into illumination, which I would like us to think of as absolute, when you enter into that, you are not illuminated how to be a better human being. You are illuminated how to be the divine being that you are to its highest and greatest potential.
What does it mean when you say love is the rapture of oneness?
Love is the rapture of what?
Oneness.
Well, if I'm awfully sorry that you are hung up on that. I am one with my lover. I'm one with my girlfriend, my wife, my sweetheart. Just a moment. I'm one with her. We are one in the togetherness of joy and peace and sex and love. And we're one in this here. You see, when you are one as all, and that's not what you mean, when you are one as all, there is no individualization. There is no separation. There is no otherness. And there is no I love her and she loves me. There is unconditional love for everyone the same, without any condition whatsoever. Now, that's a tough thing to understand. It's a tough thing to practice. But once you understand it and practice it, you are a miracle person. Yes?
The other thing that...
No, stay with that. What?
Yeah. Love is not something I do outside of myself or do to somebody else. Love is being that which I am. And
you're still talking about the relative world.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not against the relative world.
I just wanted to ask.
No, it's a good question. I'm not against the relative world. But you see, this is the difficulty when we don't discuss the absolute principle as often as we could. And this is what the University of Philosophy is all about. It's on the absolute principle. And everybody who comes in this, you're not alone, everybody who comes in this wants to take what they've learned from the relative and apply it to absolute principle, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work because it's just like saying, you are an employee and he is an employer, and the employer doesn't understand the employee. The employer only understands that if he doesn't have business, the company won't be there, so the employee won't have a job. The employee says, I want more money because I want to be able to have a better living standard, and I want to have these, this, that, and the other thing, and I don't care if the company is having tough times. They're making lots of money and they should pay me. He doesn't see the employer's point of view, and the employer does see his point of view, but also he sees the employer's point of view, you see? Now, this is almost like the absolute and relative. The employee is the relative who is on the outside enjoying life, enjoying the benefits of the employer. And the employer is on the inside. He is in the machinations of the company and he's in the work of the company, but yet he is not touched by it. He knows that one subtle comment of good tact and wisdom will bring him big contracts, which will keep the people in business for a long time and keep the employees working. Whereas the employee says, he said that about us, not knowing that the employer had a deeper ulterior motive than that. Not that it was right or wrong, but you see, we're blind, looking at the absolute from the relative, and we're blind looking at the relative from the absolute. And this is how it always must be, because it is two different areas of understanding. It's two different areas of life. Number one, 2, 3, 4,000 million. The relative is illusion. Absolute is principle. Absolute never changes. Absolute doesn't vary its direction, its program, or its reality. The relative changes every moment. It's kind of a tough thing to do, because the absolute then becomes so cold, it becomes so insensitive to a human, to mankind. And actually, God can never be the Father. God can never be the Father for humanity, because God has no caring for humanity. God is like the little boy. When he's done playing, he jumps in his puddle, you know, and messes it all up. It's not that he's messing it up. It's just that it's over with. That illusion is over with. That illusion is being changed and removed and no longer important to him. But we continue with our illusions, and we think that our illusions should continue with us. This is a great comment you're asking here and making, because what you're saying is that how do we be in the relative and think about absolute? And it takes a big jump of not faith, but a jump of awareness. And intellectualism will never spell it out. It'll never give it a foundation, because how do you intellectualize on something like this that we have built on? Now, just look. We have, let's say the great minds of the world, okay? The great intellectual geniuses of the world. And let's say a majority of them believe in the Catholic Church. And I shouldn't have to say Catholic Church, I say they believe in the Christian Bible. And the Christian Bible is so riddled with misunderstandings and misinterpretations and misquotes, yet these brilliant people, who are brilliant, illuminated thinkers, who are didactic people who come up with the most marvelous comments, they believe that stuff. Or at least they say they do. And for them to believe it, it's unbelievable. It'd be like having God say, "Oh, I understand your problem." You know? Like God say, "Yes, it's too bad that you got that problem. No, I don't intend to do anything about it, because it's your choice what you want to do." But God, you know, "No, I'm really not interested in making a change in your life for you. Now, if you want to make a change in your life, you may. If you want to put new cause in motion, you may. But, hey, I can't do that. I can't do that." What was that show?
Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty. And when Bruce Almighty was confronted by the prayers of all of humanity, he says, "There's only one thing I can do. I'll say yes to all of them." Well, by saying yes to all of them, that was not always so good.
He got some quite a mess.
Yeah, it's quite a mess. But the thing is, they didn't spell out the profundity of the mess that it could be. They didn't spell out where, shall I kill him? You know, shall I feed him or not feed him? Shall I rob this bank? Shall I do... They didn't bring up the negative points of what people were praying about. Should I do this? God, guide me, you know. Well, if you want to do it, go do it, you know. Well, that's not really the answer that humans would recommend be given in a circumstance like that. But Bruce Almighty, being a novice at being God, he said a few things which were not beneficial. And as God said to him, "I have given you total control over everything." And then later God said, "No, I didn't. I only gave you control over buffalo." But you see, now there's the inconsistency. Because in the show, Bruce had control. He says, you're the boss. I'm stepping. I'm going on vacation. You got the whole show." And then later, he just had buffalo. Mm. You see, as it was convenient to make it not sound too outrageous, they added little levers in, but they forgot to take the levers out that they put in the beginning. And you see, you have to have this consistency in your storytelling if you're going to tell stories like that. Mm. Well, the whole thing was just a farce, so I guess it doesn't make too much difference. But this is what humans do. Now, this is what you find in the Bible. You find these inconsistencies. And yet these great intellectual geniuses do not find those inconsistencies to be inconsistent. Or if they do, they just accept it. And this is what you are doing, love. You are thinking you can say one thing and then expect a different thing. You're thinking you can say, "I'm whole and perfect," and then you think that you're going to have compassion for yourself in being whole and perfect. You think that you can say of your son that he is a genius, and the next thing, he does such stupid things sometimes, and he makes this... Don't ever do that! You are not allowed to do that! You understand? You're not allowed to be inconsistent. If you're going to say your son is a genius, don't the next minute... Now, just a minute. Don't the next minute say that he does some dumb stuff. You know? But yes, you did. At the breakfast table, you were telling us about it as we were looking at these pictures. And these are things that you may have meant them with all humility and all joy and all harmony, but you spoke them into the universe saying that he was not always doing everything ideally perfect. Is your son God? Not just a minute. Is he expressing himself as God under every circumstances in a perfect way? And is he so fantastic and so glorious that all the world respects and loves and honors him? And the answer is no. Because some of his boyfriends pick on him. Some of his boyfriends feel that he's not doing everything they want him to do. Other boyfriends feel that he's not running with their crowd, so therefore he's not a good kid, you know. And he doesn't run with their crowd because he doesn't care for what the crowd does. Now, that crowd of boys thinks that he is not very good. And you see, you got to be careful. Be very careful. You have to be very consistent. Now, you have just lied to me boldly in the face. You said, yes, his other friends who he doesn't run with say that he's not doing... No! Everybody sees him fantastic. Everybody, even the guys he doesn't run with, they all admire him. They all think he's wonderful. Now, I'm not doing this to be mean to you. I'm doing this just to show you how irresponsible and how stupid we are sometimes. We just say one thing, and then we dump it all by saying, yeah, that's true, you know. Be careful. I'm on your backs all the time, not because I don't like you, not because I don't love you, but it's my privilege to work with you in sharing these concepts with you and to keep you on track on the concepts. Now, if you want to argue with me about them, if you want to argue with me to show how intelligent you are and how brilliant you are and how marvelous your thinking is, be careful, because I'll find a glitch. And I'll find a glitch even if I have to make it. You know? Even if I have to entice you into it. You know? And don't do that. Because I am only here to give you my understanding of these things. And if you want to take it, great. If you don't want to take it, I really don't care. I love you. I give you out of the kindness of my heart. But as a human being, I'm quite a failure. As a divine being, I'm doing real well. You understand? You understand? Now, how are you doing? As a human being, you're not right there the way you should be. But as a divine being, you're grand. And so on, all the way around here. Now, remember, that's not meant to be a compliment. It's just a fact. But the other part is not meant to be a degradation to you. It's just a fact, too. So, let us be careful. Let us be careful that every word that we speak reflects the divinity within us. Every word that we speak and think reflects where we would like our thought to be. And sometimes we can say some pretty strange things that are pretty important. Now, could you say to yourself, just from one point of view, I'm on top of Mount Everest? Could you say that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you feel? Do you feel cold? No. Do you feel warm? Do you feel anything? You feel presence. You feel the presence. You feel that you're there. Now, you're sitting right here in front of me. Now, how can you be there? Because your consciousness has the capacity to enter you into any state of awareness you wish. Now, if you want that awareness, make sure that you know all the things that come with it. Because if you go to Mount Everest and you go there dressed as you are, you're going to freeze your bottoms. You're going to freeze your toes and your nose. You're going to be very uncomfortable. The answer?
No.
No.
Perfect.
Why not? Because you're not going there as a human form. You're going there as a divine concept. You're going there as a divine concept which does not, it is not subject to the human vagaries, you know. It is not subject to the weather, the attitudes, or anything else. You're going everywhere in your world as a divine concept. I can say to Gertrude, Gertrude, did you take Luna to a kennel? A kennel, a hotel. Hotel for dogs.
Yes.
All right, did you see the place?
Yes.
Was it a nice place?
Oh, yes.
Is she having fun?
Yes.
Why are you saying that? Are you seeing it in your mind?
Yes.
Right now you're seeing it in your mind. Right now, you are there, and you're talking to me. Now, one of us is having a problem. No, you can do that. Your divine conceptualization can take you anywhere you want and do anything you want and not limit you. But the moment you think of it in a human way, the moment you stop and say, gee, I wonder if it's warm where Luna is, if Luna is comfortable, if she gets enough water, or I wonder if she has enough food, or are the other dogs picking on her, are they loving her? And of course, you got problems. You say, Luna is in the divine place for her right now, and everything is in divine order. And click, you look at her, and Luna's looking back at you and says, I know you're there. You can't fool me. I see things that other people can't see. You know, I'm a dog. I'm tuned in. And that she is. But see, this is the beautiful thing. Now, do you ever go visit your sons? Certainly you do. You ever visit your grandchildren? My gosh, yes. Do you ever visit your daughter? Do you ever visit your ex? Do you ever visit the people in your world? You sure do. Her ex was not feeling good recently, and she went to visit, but the thing is, she went to visit him 3 or 4 times, taking principle to him. She visualized him whole and perfect, right?
Yes.
Now, visualizing him whole and perfect, you saw him whole and perfect. You were there with him. Her consciousness was there. She had put the principle into motion. Now, were you worried about him?
No.
You were just confirming the fact that he wanted to have you confirm for him. In your heart, he's whole and perfect. You see, we're dealing with some very wonderful concepts here and some very wonderful principles. We're dealing with things that are not as they appear on the surface. As they appear on the surface, we want to get our 2 cents in there. And we don't really want our 2 cents in there. All we want to do is to speak our word and demonstrate the reality and the totality of all that we are, because we are fantastic. We are the creators of our world, the creators of our life, the creators of our experience, and everything we do is good and very good. Now, you say, Herb, you get kind of excited about some of these things, and you get kind of wolfy and kind of hard-nosed and bad-mouthed about this. What's that all about? Well, when I talk gentle to you, and I'm really a very gentle person, when I talk gentle to you, you continue to sleep. And the minute I say something that pokes you, I remember our friend, what's his name, in God?
Oh, Bruce Almighty.
Oh, that's it, Bruce Almighty. Remember Bruce Almighty? And remember when Bruce went up to heaven, you know, and he's walking through this cloud to God, and he says, but God, why? And God says, well, anytime you kneel down on the street in front of a Mack truck it hits you, it could kill you. And he says, but I've got so much I want to do. And so God took his 2 fingers and punched him right in the chest and says, go for it, Bruce, go. Hey, that hurt, Bruce said. And of course, the next thing he knew, he was given these heart shock treatments by the medics, and he was coming too. But you see, they flow these things harmoniously. When God poked him in the chest gently, you didn't think a thing about it until Bruce says, that hurt, you know. And of course, the moment Bruce said that hurt, you knew he was human. And Bruce should have known it too, but he came around. But you see, we're playing games. We're playing games. And how much we're tied into the consistency of these games. How much we're tied into when you poke him and he feels it, he's not dead. You know? And if he poked him and he didn't feel anything, he'd know that he was dead. He wasn't around. His physical body no longer had a life spirit in it. But hey, it's cool. We'll have a lot more wonderful adventures before us. And this is just the beginning. Diversity and illumination. I know that you've each gotten something very beautiful out of this today. So When you return in about half an hour, we'll continue with the next portion, which will be techniques of awareness. So, have a nice pause, and know that I love you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love you too.
I accept.